Today we are going to cover the eighth topic on taking refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, collectively translated from Pali or Sanskrit as the triple gem or three jewels. So you may remember that last time we covered the topic on impermanence and lower rebirth. For those of you who were taking notes last session, when we point 1.1.2, when we were talking about the drawback that you will remember the Dharma but not practice it. For those of you who took down the notes, we said you grabbed on to the idea that you are not going to die and think, oh, I could practice Dharma next year, and bracket next day, or the year, bracket day after. So the translation was different from the Chinese. The Chinese one says day, the English one, the older translation says year. But I've since obtained the second English translation. It should be day and not year. So let's confirm with you, for those of you who took notes last session. So we went through that topic on impermanence. This was starting on the path proper. You may remember that in Lam Rim, we have the preliminaries. We spend six topics, you know, on the preliminary practices. And then last week, we started the initial stage. In the Lam Rim, path proper is the initial, intermediate, and the final stage or perspective. So we started with impermanence, contemplating impermanence, and contemplating that when we stop breathing, if we do not make effort, if we just follow what most people do, very likely we will fall into the lower realms because we accumulate more negative karma than positive ones. So today is a continuation. So in order for us to avoid falling into the lower realm, we move on to understand the meaning of taking refuge in the triple gem. So let us first look at why do we take refuge in the triple gem. So there are two important causes mentioned here for taking refuge. Number one is to fear that we may have to experience the suffering of samsara in general and lower states in particular. So this is continuation from last session. So on suffering of samsara in total, it is also important. We will cover that in the intermediate stage. And then, not only that, secondly, to believe that if we place our trust in the triple gem, they have the power to prevent us from that source of fear and sufferings, or to save us from that source of fear. So these are the two strong reasons or the two strong causes for us to develop a strong commitment to take refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Although we express this in fear, which may sound negative, fear can be of three types, corresponding to the three levels of practices: the intermediate, the initial, intermediate, and the final. So if our fear is confined to fear of experiencing sufferings of the lower states, then this is only at the initial perspective or stage. We are going to focus on this particular aspect since these three sessions, last week, this session, and the next will be on the initial stage. But when we say taking refuge, it is not at a level, not beneficial at only this level, but it is necessary for the next two levels. So when you go on to the next level, the fear becomes the fear that we ourselves may have to experience any form of suffering in samsara as a whole. So not only trying to avoid sufferings of the animal realm, hungry ghosts and the hell realm, but also human, the demigods and the gods realm. So if that is the fear that motivates us to take the refuge, then our motivation will be a stronger one. Then it is at the second level. But this is not the final. The final is the fear. And here it's turned into something positive, or rather the compassion, which cannot bear the fact that others have to undergo suffering in samsara. So also knowing that the triple gem has the power to help us alleviate this fear, and thus we develop the bodhicitta. But we will cover this later on. So now let us move on to the object in which we take refuge. There are three. That's why it's called triple gem or three jewels. That is to say, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. They are three Sanskrit and Pali term. Only the spelling for Dharma is a different. In Sanskrit, it is a Dharma, whereas in Pali is a Dhamma. Buddha and Sangha, the spelling is the same for both. So the Buddha is the highest form of enlightened beings, and the Buddha is the highest among all beings. So there are altogether 10 Dharma realms, 10 types of beings. Six of them we have already covered. These are the six worldly beings in the six samsaric realms. And then there are four types of sages. Collectively, they are called the Aryas. So among the sages, there's the category of Arahants, and then Pratyeka Buddha, and then Bodhisattva, and Buddha, or Sammasambuddha, or Samyaksambuddha. Okay, so amongst these four, the Buddha is the highest. So, of course, since these four Aryas higher than the samsaric realm, so if you take total of 10 realms, the Buddha is the highest among all beings. Now, if we reflect on ourselves, most of us, before we come across the triple gem, before we understand the Buddha's teaching, common worldly persons seek well-being by entrusting themselves to worldly spirits, minor gods, nagas. Nagas are the dragons, demons and the like. So this is very common. In fact, in any civilization, you have that. So even in Malaysia, in any culture, any races, they have some form of this worship to these common deities. And then when we follow a universal religion, followers of other religions seek their salvation by entrusting themselves to such deities as Brahma or Sakra. Or in the case of Judeo-Christian tradition, they call it God, and other term, or Allah. So I think maybe if you don't like the term non-Buddhist, you can change it to followers of other religions. So the Brahma is the highest form of heavenly beings, and this is worshipped by Hindus. So nowadays, you see Brahma in a lot of Thai temples. You know, people call Sibin Hula, it's a Brahma. And you know how that came about or not? The worship of Brahma in in Thailand. Actually, the Thai culture is very strongly influenced by Brahminism or Hinduism. Because before Buddhism was introduced, the Indian cultures came along and had very strong influence on the culture of the whole of Southeast Asia. including Malaysia and Indonesia. Even the Cambodian and Thai language is strongly influenced by Sanskrit and not Pali. You might imagine that it is a Theravada country, so you know, but Pali only came later. When Thai embraced the Triple Gem Buddhism, there is in Theravada Buddhism, there is no such being that you can go and ask favor for wealth, like wealth god. In traditional belief, yes, like people go and pray to Tua Pek Kong, wealth, because he holds a gold ingot. So about, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, I guess, you know, or maybe, would be that long. One Thai businessman who owns a hotel in Bangkok went to see a monk to ask for help because he was financially not in a good state. So he asked the monk whether in Buddhism there is any being, any god that he can pray to. And the monk told him, no. But in Hinduism, yes, you go to India. So, well, later on, he brought back from India the worship of Brahma, which is the highest god worship in Hinduism. And then make a small shrine next to, not far from his hotel. And then he became very rich. And then that drew a lot of people to come, you know, become crazy and pray to this Brahma. And then, you know, we call this Si Bin Hud. Actually, it's a wrong term because he is not a Buddha, but he is just a deva. It drew so much attention that even some film stars from Hong Kong were crazy about praying to this Brahma. The Chinese concept of Ting Kong, Yi Wang Da Ti, in the Buddhist cosmology or the ranking of heavenly realms, what Buddhism would describe as chakra. Okay, now, we must understand that these beings either worship in the more primitive ages that actually belong to Preta realms, or those that are worshipped by some universal religions, they belong to the Deva realms. None of them is a worthy object of worship because all of them are bound up in samsara. They belong to one of the six realms. So Sufu described this as they themselves are kao mtima in Cantonese. So they cannot help you to get out of samsara. Only the Buddha, only the Triple Gem can help us. So let us look at the reason why it is so in the case of a Buddha and also the Triple Gem. So the first reason is this: a Buddha is himself free from samsaric imperfection together with its fears and sufferings. Notice we use a Buddha, not the Buddha, because in Buddhist concept, there is not only one Buddha. Anyone who gained enlightenment become a Buddha. So if you become a Buddha, you are free from samsaric imperfection together with these fears and suffering. You have transcended fear and suffering. And not only that, secondly, a Buddha is skilled in the ways of liberating others from samsara. Now, this is very important because he is only enlightened if he only has the ability to gain enlightenment and get out of samsara, but has no capability to help others do so, then he cannot help us also. So we say he has lots of skillful means to help liberate beings from samsara. And not only that, if he has the capability, but if he cannot about beings, then also he will not be very helpful. But a Buddha acts with great compassion and fairness towards all beings. So this is the third quality. And then the fourth is a Buddha has equanimity towards all beings. the Buddha does not differentiate between you are a Buddhist, so he come and help you. If you are not a Buddhist, he leave you. No, the Buddha does not discriminate. In the case of the God in other religion, if you don't accept him, he will he will not help you. If you accept him, then he help you to go to his heavenly kingdom. So a Buddha is not like that. So equanimity, no discrimination. And also the Buddha has no discrimination in another sense. Buddha is very patient with people who are easy to help. Of course, he is helping them. But with others who are very stubborn, very difficult to help, for many of secular teachers, they probably give up on some of their students. They say, beyond help. But fortunately, a Buddha has more patience than ordinary beings, ordinary teachers. So here we say equanimity. So these are the four great qualities of the Buddha, reinforcing the fact that, yes, the Buddha can help us get out of samsara. Now, the Sangha also possesses these four qualities, although to a lesser degree. Now, we will come and define what is the meaning of Sangha, who make up the Sangha later on. But it is sufficient just to say now that Sangha means an assembly. So Sangha doesn't refer to one person. You cannot point to one monk and say Sangha. That is wrong. So, to a lesser degree. If it's as complete as a Buddha, as perfect as a Buddha, then he would be a Buddha already. In the case of the Dharma has the capacity to generate the qualities within us. Now, actually, we say we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in that order. And this is expressed in that order because it, historically, there's a Buddha. The Buddha gained enlightenment. And then he gave the teaching, established the Sangha and followers. But actually, among the three, the most important is not the Buddha. The most important refuge is the Dharma. Because even the Buddha gained enlightenment by following the Dharma. So the Dharma is the proper refuge. So the Buddha is one who has gained enlightenment through the Dharma and then share it with others. And the Sangha, it's an assembly who's helping the Buddha to help others. So, okay, let's move on to the Dharma gem or jewel. So, Dharma is the teachings of the Buddha. And Dharma will finally lead us to attain Buddhahood. So, Dharma can be compared with a method or path. We'll come to that later on. Okay, now we come to the term Sangha. Actually, maybe I go back a little bit. Sometimes the word Dharma in Buddhism, you have to be very careful because it is used in different contexts, it means a different thing. So when we say Dharma here, we are talking about the teaching or the truth. That is Dharma with a capital D. But Dharma is also used in the teaching of Abhidharma to refer to indivisible elements in physical sense and in mental sense. So in physics, you would call that atom. So you break it until it cannot be further broken down. Then that is called Dharma. And then our mental states are also finely divided into what is called Dharma, but that normally is spelled with a small d. So actually sometimes the word Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, you cannot translate it in English, so it's better to leave the romanized form. So even in Chinese, when we translate it as a four fa sen, originally the term four is four tall, is by the sound Buddha. And then Dharma, when they prefer not to translate it, is translated as Ta Mo, So for example, you know the great Zen master Bodhidharma, Fa Mo Zhu Si, because inside his name there is a two word, Bodhi and Dharma. Then Sangha. So when we say we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, we say the Sanskrit word for refuge is Namo. Like just now when we recite Namo Pan Si Si Chia Moni Pho, we take refuge in our original teacher, the Sakyamuni Buddha. You have to be careful in knowing the Sanskrit grammar. So when you say you take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, you don't say Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha. This is wrong grammar, but it should be Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya. That's why in the Chinese triple gem song is Namo Pho Tho Ye, is Buddhaya. So you also see a lot of people printing poster Namo Amitabha, and then the Romanized they put Namo Amitabha. If Indians see this, they will laugh because it's wrong grammar, very poor grammar. It should be Namo Amitabhaya. You have to add YA. Okay, so much for our little Sanskrit lesson. Now, there are three types of Sangha, three categories if you like. But the word Sangha means assembly. And Sangha is the assembly of people who follow the Buddha's teachings. Actually, in Tamil, in many of the Indian dialects, the word Sangha is sometimes used in the secular sense even. So in Tamil, Sangha can refer to an association. So like in Hinduism, they have an association of their priests, so they also call it the Hindu Sangam. So that word is a common. So let's come back to the three categories, three main categories of Sangha. When we say we take refuge in the Sangha, properly speaking, we are referring to the Arya Sangha. Now, this word Arya originally carries a racial or cultural connotation. You see, in the Indian culture, there is a group of indigenous people called the Indus. If you borrow our common term here, they are the Bhumiputra. Then there is a race that come from outside. They are called the Aryans. So the Aryans are the ones that come into India and settle down in India and became successful and became predominant. So they call themselves the Aryan. So the Aryan, but as used in Buddhism, refers to sages, because the Buddha himself belonged to the Aryan race, if you like. So that word then started to carry a religious connotation. So Arya refers to Arahants, Paccheka Buddha, Bodhisattva and Buddha. So collectively they are called the Arya Sanghas, and they are the ones who had gone beyond samsara. So they are in a position to help you get out of samsara also. So for that reason, they are the proper refuge. They are the true refuge when it comes to understand the refuge in the Sangha. And I might add here to say that, you know, in the case of Arahant, there are four stages. So when you attain Arahantship, you already get out of samsara. But when you become first called a Sotapanna, when you attain Sotapanna, then you already enter the stream. Literally, that's what it means. Then you will definitely get out of samsara within seven births. So that first stage of sainthood can also be considered entering the Arya, into the Aryas. Okay, then the second category is the Bhikshu or Bhikkhu Sangha. For male, this is for the monastic order of monks, and then Bhikshuni or Bhikkhuni Sangha for the female or for the nuns. So in the modern context or nowadays, when we say Sangha, we normally refer to members of the monastic order. And why is that so? Because now if an Arahant were to appear in front of us, or a Pratyeka Buddha or a Bodhisattva is to appear in front of us, we cannot even differentiate, you know, him or her from the ordinary beings. So we can only differentiate the robe. The member of the monastic order becomes the symbol of Sangha, and for a good reason. Number one, the job of having the Dharma continue for more than 2,500 years was given to the members of the monastic order before the Buddha passed away, enter into Parinibbana. So if not for this assembly of bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, we won't have Buddhism today. We won't have the Buddha's teaching today. And then of course, from also practical point of view, the members of the monastic order have developed renunciation and devote themselves fully to the practice and the spreading of the Buddha's teaching. So for that reason, they are highly regarded by Buddhists today. There is another category called the Mahasangha. Maha means the big assembly. And now, when you say Mahasangha, it includes the fourfold assembly of both monks, nuns, and then lay men and lay women. So collectively, we call this the fourfold assembly. Sometimes we say sevenfold because in the monastic order, there are three other categories. So ultimately, one for a male become a bhikkhu. But before you take a bhikkhu ordination, you start with sramanera. And then before you take bhikkhuni ordination, you start with sramanerika and siksamana. So there are altogether five categories of members of monastic order. So this make up the Mahasangha. Okay, now to make it easy for us to understand, we now explain ordinary refuge and also extraordinary or special refuge using analogy that is easy to understand. So at the ordinary level, we entrust ourselves completely to the triple gem, and this attitudes we have talked about earlier is an analogy where you develop the attitudes which a sick person adopts when he entrusts himself to a doctor, the medicine, and the nurses. So the Buddha is like the doctor, the Dharma, the medicine, and then the Sangha, the helper for the doctor, the nurses, if you like. So here you also understand why we say that refuge, in terms of the three refuge, the Dharma is the most important, because what actually cure your sickness is the medicine, not the Buddha. Okay, the Buddha knows to prescribe the right type of medicine for you, but if you don't take the medicine, the Buddha cannot help you. Okay, then we say extraordinary refuge. So when we say extraordinary refuge, we are taking it at another level of taking the meaning of refuge to mean that we aim for Buddhahood. This is the ultimate goal. This is in the Lam Rim context, this is the third perspective or the third stage or the final stage. So in order to do that, you have to develop the bodhicitta and practice the six paramitas. So now if you take Buddhahood as your ultimate goal, then taking refuge in the Buddha means you want to become a Buddha. That is what it means. And then Dharma refers to the path leading to that ultimate goal. So notice we use plural, Because there are many different paths. So Buddhism does not say there is only one way. There are many ways. Because sentient beings have different types of defilements. So the doctor does not only have one type of medicine that cure every sickness. So the Buddha has great compassion, and so he prescribed different medicine for people with different defilements. So although there is a one common goal, the path leading to that goal can be many. So I remember when we were schooling time, there was one Christian church that put posters and everywhere. The message they put is one way. One way to God. But in the Buddha's teaching, we must say many ways, not one way. Okay, then Sangha refers to the spiritual community treading the path to the goal. And especially this Sangha will be very helpful to us if we are treading the same path. You see, because if we go back and say that using the Buddha as the final goal, let's say we want to go high up Penang Hill. So first of all, we determine our target, our goal. We say, okay, the top of Penang Hill is our target, okay? And then to high up Penang Hill, there are different paths. You can start from Ai Tam, you can start from Botanical Garden, you can start from Telok Pahang. So there are many, many different paths that will lead us there, or even from Balai Pulau. So these are the different tracks up to the hilltop. And then Sangha can be compared, or the analogy to these friends threading the track to the top. Okay, so when you say you have taken refuge in the Buddha, it means you take Buddha as your ultimate goal. When you say you take refuge in the Dharma, it means you have selected one of Buddha's path and actually started treading on the path. Not only looking, not only admiring, but still wondering. at bottom of the hill, you will never reach your destination. And then when you say you take refuge in the Sangha, it means that you are not treading the path alone. There are companions along the path. Some are ahead of you, some are behind. So those ahead, you follow them. This is also the reason why members of the monastic order are given greater respect, because they are the full-timers. But you can also practice the Buddha's teaching by being a part-timer. And if you are a part-timer and you practice and study very well, sometimes you can do better than even full-timers. But of course, it will take you longer. So actually, when you say taking refuge in the Sangha, meaning this spiritual community, the companionship, you follow people in front of you, you try to help. At the same time, when you're hiking up, you try to turn your turn backward and try to help people who are behind you. So if you understand that, it means developing the bodhicitta. So that is the meaning of what we describe as extraordinary refuge. Okay, now let's go on to talk about the benefits of taking a refuge. We will just go through them. The first one is very easy. By taking the refuge, you become a Buddhist. This is in the proper sense. So before you take refuge in the Triple Gem, you are not a Buddhist. You are not technically a Buddhist. Just like in Christianity, to become a Christian, you must be baptized. And then secondly, you need to take refuge. Taking refuge serves as a foundation for all vows. Now, the Tibetan use the word vows. In other traditions, they use precepts. So if you want to take five precepts, you have to take refuge first. So like in Pali, they always do the refuge and the precept together. They call Tisarana Pancasila, San Kui Ujie in Chinese. When monk or a nun wish to enter the monastic order, before taking the novice precepts and the full ordination precept, refuge first. And if you want to be a bodhisattva, you want to observe a bodhisattva, well, same, you have to have refuge first. And then by taking refuge in the triple gem, we will remove karmic obscurations accumulated in the past. Now this is extremely important, because from beginner's past, we have accumulated all these obstructions that are hindering our progress. So if you don't take refuge and remove these, chances are you will not progress very far. And then we will easily accumulate extensive merit. This is also very important, because in Buddhism we say that we have to develop merit and wisdom. Okay, so without merit, actually you will find it very difficult to progress also, to make good progress. And then fifthly, we will avoid both human and non-human harm. So if you have taken a refuge, you need not fear about people harming you, or some spirits or ghosts harming you. Then the sixth is we will avoid falling into the lower realms. This is where we started. And then we will easily achieve all temporary and ultimate. By this we mean the temporary refers to the temporary happiness when we avoid the lower rebirths. This is the initial stage. And by the ultimate, we are referring to the next two stages, to get out of samsara. Okay, and then not only that, we will quickly achieve Buddhahood. Not only get out of samsara and become arahant, but actually attain Sammasambuddha. So these are the eight benefits of taking refuge in the triple gem. Now, after we have taken the refuge in the triple gem, there are certain things here described as the precepts to be followed by those who take refuge. So there are two categories, individual and also general. So the individual precepts are again divided into negative and affirmative ones. So after you have taken refuge in the Buddha, you do not take refuge in mundane gods anymore. So notice we say you have to understand the meaning of taking refuge. It doesn't mean that all of us started by praying to deities and all that before we come into Buddhism. So after we take refuge in the triple gem, does it mean that we cannot pray to these gods anymore? This is not so. In other religion, maybe that is their approach. But we are talking about refuge, meaning you must truly understand that these beings cannot help you to get out of samsara. Only the triple gem can. So there's no use for you to take refuge in these gods. Okay? And then secondly, after you have taken refuge in the Dharma, then you do not follow other teachings. And in Buddhism, we talk about two types of teaching. One type of teaching is the one you seek internally. Others, and the Buddha's teaching belongs to that category. Most other religious faith, the teaching is you seek an external, you seek outside yourself. So in Chinese, it's called Nei Tao and Wai Tao. This is the difference between the two. So you say, Pu Kui Yi Wai Tao Xie So, you no longer follow the teachings of these other religions, because they cannot help you to get out of samsara. But in the Tibetan tradition, also they also emphasize that you do not harm sentient beings, any sentient beings, because the Dharma cannot harm any sentient beings. So after you have taken refuge in the Dharma, you observe that precept not to harm sentient beings. And then thirdly, after you have taken refuge in the Sangha, you do not associate with non-Buddhist teachers. Okay, then on the affirmative side, after you have taken a refuge in the Buddha, you regard any figure of a Buddha as a real Buddha. That's why, you see, we have a high respect, whether it's a printed Buddha image or a solid three-dimensional, we treat with a great respect because it's a symbol of the Buddha gem. And then secondly, respect for Buddhist scriptures because they represent the Dharma gem. Yeah? And in Tibetan, they even describe it as you treat with a great treasure and respect any piece of paper with the Buddha's teaching. Okay? And then thirdly, to respect members of the monastic order. And it's also described as respecting the robe symbolism of the person being members of the monastic order. So you see there is a difference between the traditions. In the Theravada tradition and the Tibetan traditions, the robe that the monks wear, and in Tibetan they also have nuns, the same type of robe as worn by the Buddha. Only in Tibet, some of the schools use red color rather than saffron or yellow color. But that robe is retained. Now, when Buddhism went into China, the Chinese already had 3,000 years of civilization, already had their established value systems. So eventually, the Buddhist teachers in China were very bold. They also, of course, had the great wisdom. They developed a form of a Buddhist tradition that suits the Chinese culture. This is localization. So the robes worn by Chinese members of the monastic order, they are not the original robe. They are actually Chinese dress. The actual robe is when we have the ceremony, we put on brown color or yellow color or red color. That is a robe proper. But also in our Hai Ching, we have a stripe. That is symbolism of the robe. Okay. So you see in both Theravada and Tibetan tradition, if you pay respect to members of a monastic order, they don't stop you from paying three bows to them because you are paying respect to the robe that symbolize the Sangha. But the Chinese has already a different value system. In the case of a Chinese monastic member, when you want to pay respect to the person develops a humility and say, no, I'm not worthy of a worship like a Buddha. So please only pay one bow instead of three. But you don't see that in the Theravada and Tibetan tradition. So when you go to that tradition, don't just make one bow. This is very bad manners for them. Okay. Then other general precepts. Let's go through them. Number one, recall the virtues of the Triple Gem and take refuge in them again and again. So taking refuge does not mean you go to a refuge ceremony once, and then after that you forget about the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. No, it doesn't mean that. You take refuge again and again. And then secondly, recall how the Triple Gem benefits you and offer them the first part of anything you eat or drink. This is, I think, Tibetan tradition. The Chinese also has something similar. So before we take the meal, we say, offering to the Buddha, offering to the Dharma, offering to the Sangha. Gong yang fo, gong yang fa, gong yang sen. It's the same meaning. And then after you have benefited yourself by taking the refuge, you encourage others to take refuge also. Fourthly, to recall the benefits of taking refuge and do so three times each in the morning and night. Now, you see in the Tibetan refuge and also in the Pali, you always recite three times. For example, in the Pali one is Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. To the Buddha for refuge I go, and then Dharma, and then Sangha. And then they say Dutiyampi, means for the second time. and then for the third time. And in the Tibetan tradition, when you take refuge, you also do it three times. So what do we mean by doing it three times? Is with our body, speech, and mind. In the Chinese tradition, in the monastery, we also take refuge in a morning service and evening service. We will have the refuge. And in any ceremony, there is also the refuge, taking of refuge. But in the case of the Chinese tradition, the refuge is done once, not three times. So when you do that, you must contemplate, you do this completely with your body, speech, mind. So it's not something you just recite, like a parrot. Okay. Then, number five, undertake an activity only after placing your trust in the Triple Gem. I'll come back to this. And then, finally, don't abandon the Triple Gem, whether to save your life or merely acting in jest. So, you take the Triple Gem very, very seriously, even at the risk of your own life. So, for example, you go to a country, or it was not so long ago, when some religions come to a place, and then they say you either convert or they will kill you. So if you are a genuine Buddhist, you don't say, okay, I give up Triple Gem, because you want to save your life. Your conviction is so strong. Okay, let me go back to point number five. Share a little incident with you. We had Druang Rinpoche had conducted the Mani retreat here last year. So when he first came to Malaysia, the first time there was a big event organized in the Bukit Jalil Stadium. And that time, I happened to be with him in Country Heights. And then they say that Rinpoche is alone because you need to pass security, so there are not many visitors. So I say, okay, why not talk to him? So I had a private discussion with him, and that time I brought up the topic of our Thai university project. I say that, when we start a project like this, will we meet with the obstacles? And then also, this is going to be special because we have three traditions, so more complicated. Will that mean more obstacles? Then he said, yes, there will be obstacles. And then he said that when you meet with these obstacles, you don't give up. And you don't have to do anything because we are all followers of the Triple Gem. You just place your trust on the Triple Gem and everything will be okay. So this I share with you. Okay, so for our discussion, we will use the three following questions as a guideline. What have you been depending on? It can be worldly things. People say that, I buy insurance, then I'm secure. Some people say, if I have a lot of money, I'm secure. Or if I go and find a kaiye, very rich kaiye, I'm also okay. Or in terms of religious faith or belief, you can share what you have been depending on previously. And then secondly, if you had already taken refuge in the Triple Gem, why did you do so? For some people, the reason they did so was they took refuge Mong Cha Cha, because some friends asked them to come and then they just joined. Especially if that is the case, how can you further raise the meaning or commitment of taking refuge in the Triple Gem? So we'll break into a small group for the group discussion. Try to go back to the original group, and if one particular group is too small, we may combine into two instead of three groups. Okay, thank you.